So, Coach, this time of year, what occupies your time?
Well, primarily right now, since it's our off season, I have spent the majority of my time watching college players, going to practices and games, trying to get ready for the draft. We don't have a first round pick this year, although it's not inconceivable that we could trade up to get one before the draft. We have the 15th pick in the draft, so I've had a chance to go out. I've done a lot more work this year by video than maybe in the past, not having a first round pick. And then the other thing we do during the off season is go and spend time with our players that are playing overseas. We had such a young team last year that I thought one of our biggest priorities this off season was to kind of get our team to grow up. So I've made a couple trips to Europe, spend time watching our young players particularly play and practice and go out and, you know, have dinner with them and just talk basketball and, you know, just try to communicate with them also on a weekly basis by email or phone. You know, it's hard for us in the off season, which I know will be one of our topics tonight, but hard for us in the off season to have the control we would like with our players. I got very spoiled in the NBA to kind of have the time to carve out what we needed to do to with our players, and we're at the mercy of European coaches right now and what they do with their teams. And so it's a little bit harder to focus in on things, but we gave them all a list when they left of three or four things that we thought were important for them to work on while they were in Europe, and we sat down and met with each of our players individually. And so that's kind of been the focus of our offseason.
Mm-hmm. As you know, a number of the vast majority of the coaches that are with us would be, you know, youth development coaches. We've got quite a number who are high school coaches and some who are also college coaches. If our college coaches are on the phone with us right now, that means that their season's probably ended earlier than they would have liked, and most of the high school seasons have ended. This time of year, what what suggestions do you have for coaches as they start to think about their off season? You know, you touched on player development and the issues that might be different for them. What are your suggestions for coaches this time of year?
Well, I think the first thing that I tell coaches, because it's what we do with our staff, is to sit down and try to objectively review the prior season. You know, kind of knowing which players you're going to have back. And then, you know, do a real true self-evaluation of everything. Your players, your coaching staff, you know, the organization. For us, it's an organization. It's, for others, it's, you know, how they go about everything from player development to scouting to, you know, offenses, defenses, everything. And so that's the thing that we start out with. You know, I think that if you can't do a good self-evaluation first, you're not going to help your players with player development. You know, if you're a high school coach, you're going to be limited by the number of players you have playing, you know, spring sports or involvement in the summer. But I think it's important that you meet with everybody within your program. I don't usually meet with our players, although we don't have a lot of time to get ready for it when our season ends because they're trying to leave for Europe. But sit with your staff and try to at least give a semblance of a plan. Hopefully you've been doing that to some degree throughout the season. We try to take notes on our players on a weekly basis on individual skill development, how they fit in the team, what we can do for them. So that's where we start with our off season. Mm-hmm. And I've kind of I don't know which ones you've posted because I don't have it in front of me, but we are talking about the things that we have to do. And I'll start with saying constant self analysis is the biggest key. The other thing we'll start doing, and we do it throughout our season, and we have to try to do it in the off season, is get somebody to give you an outside opinion of your team. Now, it's a little bit harder at the younger level, but, you know, it's a great way in a community, I think, to involve retired coaches or people you know have played, you know, to have them come in as a third person and watch your team. I give films of our team to other people like that after our season, say, hey, watch five or six. You know, come back and tell us what you think. Tell me what you think about our players, what we can do. If you can't do that as a coach, you're probably not going to get a lot better. We keep saying, does somebody else have a better way to do things than we do? Are there resources that we haven't tried before? You know, what's a true problem and what's just a minor obstacle? You know, see it a different way. And be a good listener. You know, listen to your players, too. When you sit down and evaluate them, you know, let them give you feedback. If they're uncomfortable just sitting and talking to the head coach, you know, go talk to an assistant. Or whoever in your on your staff is, you know, they have a comfort zone with. You know, I think that's the start. And then when you start putting together a plan, you know, try to be efficient about how you do it. You don't have, at younger ages, you know, the same hours that an NBA or college coach might have with their players. Although with the limited hours the college coaches get, they probably think you have more. but when you put a plan together with your players, make sure it's productive things you want to do and not just busy work. We don't do drills just for the sake of doing drills. Make it goal-oriented. Use the time that you have and that they have efficiently. You know, if it's delegating one of your assistant coaches who's a good shooting coach or a good post coach to spend the time with that, you know, that's good. But the other part of it at the end of the season, I think, is to take a pretty productive break, you know, kind of refresh yourself. If you have the luxury as a coach with your players to take a break before you have these meetings and sit down, then I think that's the first part of it. Then the next part is actually, you know, coming up with the specific plan for your players, for your offenses, your defenses, whatever you're going to change for the previous year. And then, you know, getting it on paper, being specific about it, and coming up with a plan. And I kind of mix the two together. Like right now, I'm doing some, we have two players that aren't playing overseas, and they were players that were hurt for us last year, Asia Jones and Carol Lawson. And we're spending time with specific plans for them that take into account the injuries they had. Even though they're veterans, there's things that they want to work on and we would like them to work on. Some of the time we are spending with them and some of it is with somebody else and trying to be specific. I've been in the gym this week with Carol Lawson and we're taking specific, you know, shooting drills and one-on-one drills and tailoring it to what she needs to work on and what also we think fits into our offense. And that can be a, you know, an item for discussion at some point is, you know, how you design that and do. I'm a big believer in the work that you do and the drills that you do with players for self-improvement also fit in as best you can to the concepts you want with your team. Now, I'm a big believer in designing your offense to fit your players and not vice versa, but I think the two go hand in hand for individual work. I know I'm rambling a little bit here, but I think the general part is the more important than the actual specific things you sit down. I mean, if you have a kid that needs to develop a left hand, that might be a readily identifiable thing. But how you go about it and what you get them to do is a lot more specific. You know, the energy you bring to that and the upbeatness you bring to it, I think it easily rubs off on players as to how you're going to go about it too. So that's the starting point, I think, for coaches right now.
No, excellent. That I think that helps out a lot, and that's definitely one of the things that many coaches struggle with. Can you take just a few more minutes just to talk a little bit more about, I know you said you didn't want to get too specific, and it is a tough one without knowing players specifically, but how do you decide which way you go in terms of the balance of building out your off-season player development in terms of going towards, you know, creating drills that fit your offense or creating drills that fit the strengths or weaknesses of your players?
Well, I think that we kind of split it in half in the sense that I'm a huge believer in going back in the off season to just basic fundamentals first. And we're back into footwork, balance, you know, the skills that kind of go throughout your team. I mean, back to pivoting and drop steps and working on either hand as a driver or as a post player. We're big on working on finishing around the basket, being specific about passing drills. But I'm a huge believer in going back to just basic stuff as part of it. Or if you're in the middle of a shooting drill, putting something else in it that requires other footwork, or that the person that's going to do shooting has to be a passer as a part of the drill and get it back like they would in games. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, you can go slowly on new things, I think, but it's important to get them back to a game speed as they learn skills as quickly as they can. I don't like, you know, going in a gym and watching kids just shoot around. It's okay for a warm-up. It's okay just to kind of groove your shot. But once you want to be a competitive, higher-level player, players need to start learning to do things at a game speed. And I think that part of that is, you know, I don't get impressed by a kid who says, hey, I was in the gym for an hour the other day, or he says, I made 300 shots. That doesn't really impress me. Did you make 100 at game speed? So I think that's part of it. I think, you know, with younger players, particularly those who are youth coaches and lower levels of high school and even all the way through high school, I think you need to get back to how to play in the stance, both offensively and defensively. I think that's part of it. I think you need to have footwork drills that have to do with jumping and landing and pivoting. You know, I think those, we've kind of gotten away from that sometimes, and I think we need to teach them how to play rather than plays. Specific things, we would take young players in any drive one-on-one situation, we would be working with them on getting their shoulder below the defender's shoulder, getting into triple threat, learning to, you know, play more efficiently, getting to the basket from 17 feet, 18 feet in one or two dribbles. But the other part of it I would be careful of, and I would caution all coaches of younger kids, don't label your players when they are young. Don't let them say, you know, to a kid who's in the seventh or eighth grade, he's a post player, she's a post player, and vice versa. Kids are growing at different rates. They're learning different skills. I'm a huge believer that kids at a young age should, in all their off-season work, be trying to do the skills of almost every position. It will serve them well in their future, and it will serve you well, too, because you don't know over the course of a year or two how much a kid's going to develop in size and strength and just skill-wise. Who wouldn't want to have a post player who can put the ball on the floor against the press and give you one more outlet to do things against pressure? Who wouldn't want to have a guard who's strong and physical that gets a mismatch in the post to be able to post up? I think those are all huge things. So that's the first half of it. Then what we start doing is, for our specific thing, the second part of your question is that we start designing the offense to fit the team. And I think you were going to post the thing that the question or checklist that we kind of have of 20-some questions about how you do that.
Yes,
and
go ahead. We'll be posting it. No,
that's
I was going to say we'll be posting it, Coach. Go ahead.
And if you don't mind, I think I'm going to go through at least some of the major questions because I think they help you think about what you do with your players in the offseason. I'm not going to sit here on the phone and tell you how to work on a crossover or a jab step. Everybody should be doing that. It's how you fit that in and what you do. So you're going to have your own philosophy, Coach, of what you like to do. Some people like to play slow. Some people like to play fast. But I think you have to be very clear in your mind what you do. So here's the questions we ask ourselves before every season or at the end of a season. First one is, in an ideal situation, what would you prefer to do on offense? You know, are you a fast break coach? Do you want a democracy, a dictatorship, or something in between? You know, a lot of coaches say, I want to run and I want to give my kids freedom, and then I watch them, and on the third possession of a game, they're already, you know, putting on the brakes and slowing it down because they've either had a turnover or somebody missed an open shot. I think, you know, you have to kind of know what you want beforehand. I think you got to decide right away, as a high school coach in particular, what is the biggest strength of your team? What can you count on every night on your team? And that's probably your starting point. Are you better in the post, or are you on the perimeter, or are you lucky enough to have both? I think you have to know whether you have shooters, drivers, or slashers. And if you have kids that are one or the other in the offseason, you should be teaching them to do both. Are your shooters better off the dribble or off of screens or off a draw and kick? You know, there's a lot of kids that are great in sliding into a spot and draw and kick, but if you ask them to incorporate footwork coming off a down screen or a flex screen or things like that, then the game changes. So I think you have to know what those kids are. If you have post players, what is their go-to move at which block, and what is their most comfortable counter move? I'm still fascinated. I've gone to college practices, and I've asked a kid, you know, where do you want the ball? Which block do you want it on? And they don't know. That's a scary thing if you've gotten to somebody by the time they're late teens and early 20s, if they really don't know, and they don't know what they do best. It's nice to teach, you know, every Sigma and Mikhail post move, but the reality is you want a player that has a great go-to move that they're comfortable with, that's money in the bank, and that there's a counter if it's taken away. And I think that's the starting point. I think you can put kids through post drills and see them do 10 different things, up and unders and all those, but you're going to find out what they gravitate to, what they feel comfortable with and they're confident in, and work with that. I think the next thing is, you know, you've got to decide whether you want to play fast, medium, or slow. Do you want to take the first good shot or wait for the absolute best shot, whatever that is? You know, I'm a big believer in taking a good open shot that you've practiced every day. You know, I see more teams pass up open shots early in the offense, trying to get what is called a better shot, and it ends up being a contested shot. Everybody knows that an open shot has got a better percentage of contested, no matter where it is. Right now, we've decided in the NBA and WNBA, and it's pretty close percentage in both. We charted it for a couple years that there's almost a 7% to 8% field goal difference between an open shot at the foul line and a shot with a hand in its face, unless you have exceptional shooters. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, you have to know that going in as a coach. We decide, do you want motion, quick hitters, sets, things that go into continuity, and will you give your best shooters freedom? Can you deal with the psyche of the good shooter? And I think that's a huge off-season thing to think about for not only how you teach your players, but for how you coach your team. Because I've seen more good coaches mess with good shooters and turn them into mediocre shooters. Because the kid is more than confused about what's a good shot or bad shot. If it's a good shot today, why is it a bad shot tomorrow? Now, there is a difference maybe between a good shot in the first 4 minutes of a game and a good shot in the last, you know, 2 minutes of a game. And I think, you know, over the course of time, you can work with that. But I think, you know, you have to be somewhat consistent as a coach in what you allow. I think of good shooters as good trash talkers. They got to have a swagger about them and not think about it. And I think the other thing that's hard in this is that, well, there's two parts. Number one, I think we all, or most of us, would like to have a really intense, good defensive team. But one of the hardest things for young kids to differentiate is the energy and effort you bring to offense is not the same energy and effort you want on defense is not the same energy and offense you want on offense. Because defense to me is energy and hard work and all of those things, intensity, and offense, good offense, is relaxation. And that's a hard commodity for a lot of young players to balance out. It's not that easy because you get them all psyched and hyped up for the game and they're going 100 miles an hour and they're playing great defense. And now they got to take a deep breath when they go to the offensive end. And I think that's a hard thing to do. And I think it's one of the things you have to really work with your players on.